Let's do this. Let's. Why don't we just, for the record, have you tell us your name and where you were born, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I'm Richard Patterson. I was born in Marshall, Michigan, August 23rd, 1917.
17. And yeah. How did you first get to the Kalamazoo and Parchment area?
Well, actually, we moved from Marshall to Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, before I can remember. And then my father was a mortician, and he obtained work here in Kalamazoo, and we've lived in Kalamazoo ever since 1923.
Since 23. And can I ask who he worked for?
Truesdale's.
For Truesdale?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. And how did you first come to the Parchment area?
Well, I graduated from Western in 1940, and I went up to a little town near Saginaw to teach. It was Breckenridge. We came back to Kalamazoo, and moving into Kalamazoo, then I commuted between Kalamazoo and Dalton for a while. But we didn't like where we were living. We lived up on the hill east of the Consumers Power Plant and the City Light Plant and the New York Central Roundhouse. So all that smoke blew up the hill into our back door. We decided that we wanted to find something else, and so we started looking. And we decided on Parchment. The children had not entered school yet. But it had the school district had a pretty good reputation. I thought it was well managed. So we moved out to Parchment in 1945, right here in this house.
Wow. And we are on Groveland, right? 402
right.
Groveland.
402 Groveland Avenue.
And you moved here in 45.
1945,
And tell me what the school district looked like then. Was it a K through 8th grade?
It was a K through 9.
K through 9.
And our 9th grade graduates had two options. They could go to Kalamazoo Central or they could go to State High.
And what was State High?
Well, that was a school operated by Western Michigan University for their practice teachers.
So it was K through 9.
Mm-hmm.
The district had a good reputation.
Yeah, it was a well-managed district, a well-run district. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Do you remember by chance who was superintendent when you first...
George McDonald, that's
okay.
Right.
Tell me what your recollections of the city and the geography were back then. What did things look like?
Well, now, back then, I do have some contact. I did have some contact with Parchment in the 30s.
Oh.
And I thought you might be interested in that.
Yes.
At that time, it would be the late 20s or early 30s, I would say the early 30s, I was selling Saturday evening posts door to door, and there was a route available out here in Parchment, and I came out to look at it. I decided not to take it, but coming out here, to get to Parchment at that time, if you didn't have your own transportation, you could take the streetcar as far as Riverside Cemetery. That's as far as a streetcar came. Then you'd get on the bus and come out Riverview Drive to Parchment. The bus route ended right in front of the present middle school, right next to the lawyer's office, which then was a dry goods store, and next to that was a little ice house where people could go and buy ice, and that was the end of the route, and that is where the wide pavement became two-lane to go farther north.
Okay, so across from the current middle school, which is Dave Butler's law office.
Yeah. Well, that was a dry goods store. That was Weichstra's dry goods store at the time.
Okay, and the pavement ended about there at the ice.
The pavement didn't end, but it became two-lane right at that point.
Okay, it became two-lane.
Yeah.
So Riverview then went north. And when you say streetcar, tell me about that.
Oh, I suppose you don't remember streetcars. Well, Kalamazoo had a traction system, streetcars. They were electric cars operated on rails in the center of the street. And there was one that operated on what at that time was known as Lincoln Avenue. It is now East Michigan. And that car used to come out here as far as Riverside Cemetery, and that was the end of the line. The late 20s and early 30s.
Early 30s, okay.
See, I graduated from high school in 1936, and this all occurred before then.
Okay. Oh, that is interesting. And it seems like, this is a silly question, but were the roads in decent condition through Parchment at that point?
Oh, yeah, they were all right.
Decent, okay.
Yeah.
Silly question, but...
But also at that time, too, there was a restaurant in the apartment down there, it was known as Hudson Manor. I remember when there was a restaurant there.
In which apartment?
Right in the one right on the corner of Oak Grove and Riverview Drive.
Oh, really?
I don't know who owns it now. I think it's known as the Parchment Manor, and the restaurant also was known as Hudson Manor.
Very interesting. So what else? Now tell me about when you came in 45 as well,
mm-hmm.
or back in your earliest recollections. We had, for instance, the community house.
The community house, that's right, yeah.
What are your recollections of that?
Well, it had not been enlarged to the extent that it finally was before the Methodist Church took over. And it was for community activities of all sorts.
And that was owned by the paper mill.
That's right.
Prior,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. See, the paper mill at that time, when we moved out here in 1945, all of the city services were provided by the Parchment Mill too. They provided fire. They owned the water system, which there's quite a story behind that. And they swept the streets. Of course, we didn't have paving on Glengyle or Groveland at the time we moved up here. Nor did we have sewer or water or gas.
Wow. Can you give me a hint on that water story?
Yes. Actually, we wanted water here. We were part of the city. We were within the city limits. But the mill owned the water system, and they were not interested in expanding it, so we couldn't get water here.
So when you moved here, you had no...
I had a well.
Yeah, had well and septic.
Yeah, a septic tank, yeah.
This, forgive my ignorance, but was there really a city commission-wise or mayor?
Oh, yes, there was a city commission. See, Parchment had become a city, I think, in 1939, if I remember correctly.
Which is why we're celebrating an anniversary here, right?
So, actually, there was a commission, and Frank Libby was mayor. I really don't remember much about commissioners at the time, but we used to, if we needed a building permit, we would go down to Dick Ram's house on Glendale Boulevard and get our permit. We paid our taxes to Les Hubbard over on Ellesmere. Rather, there was no city hall, per se, at the time.
So they worked out of their residences.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And on the mill side, did you know many folks that were significant in mill operations?
Well, I knew some. Frank Libby, of course, was with the mill. I knew Merle Wood. Merle at one time was city assessor, and Les Hubbard, who was treasurer, worked at the mill. And Harold DeWeard was Jake Kindleberger's secretary.
Wow.
Phil Bixby, I don't know whether you knew Phil Bixby or not. Phil lived on the corner of Hubbard and Parchmount.
And was obviously that was a prominent feature of the community back then.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about that. What was it? I picture it to be quite a bustling enterprise.
Well, we were really, we almost had a free ride, really, because the mill was providing all of this. And as such, why should we criticize? It wasn't costing us anything in the first place. So we almost had a free ride. When we moved to Parchment, my taxes on this house for the first year were $20.
Wow. Even inflation adjusted, that's pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I've always heard the tales of mill involvement in what we might call ordinance or even lawn care, if you didn't mow your lawn, that you'd hear
oh,
about.
Oh yes,
it from
indeed,
someone.
Jake Kittleberger. Jake was very, very community spirited, but he was also a bit of a despot too. And I remember one instance where he was walking down Parchmont Avenue and he talked to a resident over there whom I knew, who was later on the Board of Education. And there was some grass in the crack in the sidewalk. And he looked at this man. He says, young man, he says, you need to clean your sidewalk. And the man's response was, oh, man, mind your own business.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
What other recollections of Jake Kindleberger?
I have no recollection particularly of Jake. My greatest recollection is of Joe, his son.
Yeah, what year did... I don't know when Jake died.
Jake must have died... Jake probably died in the mid-40s, because I know that Joe was living in 1946 yet.
Okay. Jake... I'm sorry, did you say you had seen Jake?
I remember having seen Jake. Okay. Of course, they lived down there on Riverview Drive. That number, I think, is 520, if I'm not mistaken. Very, very attractive place.
Sure.
Very beautiful.
So you have some recollection of him?
Not much.
Okay.
Not much, really.
Okay.
Of course, prior to that time, they hired a lot of college students. And particularly if you had some musical or if you had some athletic ability, you probably had an in. Don McDowell was a personnel director out here, and Don McDowell was very, very musical. And if you had some musical ability, you'd get yourself a job on the Black Gang. There was not much question about that.
Interesting. And tell me what the Black Gang was.
Well, they were the guys that cleaned the guys that cleaned up the machinery.
The old pictures of people crawling barefoot across very good. We'll come back to some other things, but when, I'm curious, did you become involved, you became quite involved in education. When did?
Well, of course, I graduated from Western State Teachers College, and as such, I was a school teacher. And I taught 4 years in Breckenridge. I came down and I taught 3 years in Dalton. And then I left education very, very briefly, and then I began to coordinate veterans training for the Kalamazoo Public Schools. And they were building the new middle school down here, the junior high school, the original portion of the middle school. There was a dark red building down there, and they built a larger pink brick building just south of that. And they were in the process of constructing that. At the time I was coordinating veterans training, and George McDonald knew that I had taught industrial arts. They had never had industrial arts in the Parchment schools, so he kept he would come down to visit with me. Talk, kind of, you might say, picking my brains about it, and there were certain things that I recommended, and finally what happened was that they offered me the job teaching industrial arts in the Parchment schools, which I did for 4 years.
What year would that have been, roughly?
I came to teach in Parchment in 1949.
Okay.
Yeah. Came in, the north end of the junior high building was the shop, clear across the north end. There was no connection between the two buildings at the time. And I came in and I had a bare wall. I would recommend it to George during the time that we talked that if it were practical, that if they knew in time they ought to hire their industrial arts teacher the 1st of July rather than wait until school opened. So they actually hired me the 1st of July, and I equipped the whole shop. Built the benches, and I was about to build the benches out of two by sixes, and they had torn up the floor in the kindergarten room in the old elementary building. It was good maple, so I grabbed that and I sawed off the tongues and the grooves, and I glued it all together. And the first benches were actually hardwood benches.
Wow.
And we used those for quite some time.
Wow. Interesting. So that was 49 through 53.
1949 to 53. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
And then that led you to what?
I left teaching then, and I went to work for Allen Electric for a very brief length of time, and then moved from there to Ingersoll Kalamazoo Division. And along about 19, it would have to be probably, I would say, around 1955, the Kalamazoo Public Schools served notice on all of the surrounding canine districts that after a certain date, they would no longer accept non-resident tuition students, beginning students. They would work those who were in the system out, just like my son Dick was. He was in the last group that left Parchment to go to Kalamazoo Central High School.
And I'm sorry, what year was this notice?
This would have been 19, probably I would guess about 1950, I would say around 1955 or 56, right in there.
Okay.
And, of course, there were two options. It seemed as though the existing Board of Education at that time didn't see any option other than annexation to the Kalamazoo Public Schools. But the Kalamazoo school system had also said that we are not interested in annexing you unless you first annex politically to the city of Kalamazoo.
Wow.
And I was of the opinion that there might be another side, that maybe there was another option. But the way it was presented to us, the Board of Education just didn't give us any kind of an option at all. That was the only thing we could do. Annex to the city of Kalamazoo, annex to the school district. Well, there were a group. I hoped that I would be able to kind of make a imply and get people to realize that there was another option and to look into that at least. And there was another group of people here in Kalamazoo, the Parchment Citizens Committee were formed, and they were strictly anti-annexation. Strictly so. I happened to be one of them. Primarily because annexation to the city of Kalamazoo was what was not acceptable to me. But I also saw that the situation that prevailed out here, that we had an opportunity to go it ourselves, go it by ourselves, and have an exemplary school system. And so I threw my lot in with them, and we fought and didn't have much audience with the Kalamazoo Gazette or Dwight Stocker. Dwight was definitely in favor of annexation.
And when we're talking about annexation, both the issue of the schools and then the issue of the municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the group was against both, or the group?
Well, the Parchment Citizens Committee was strictly anti-annexation against both.
Against both, okay.
Well, we studied at some length, and we talked to architects, and we had quite an upheaval in the Board of Education, at which time Vic Smith and I were elected. So here we were, two neophytes as far as board operations are concerned, with three people who had had experience a long time. And at the end of the first year there, the terms of one expired, so he was not going to seek re-election. Two of the three decided that they were going to resign. This, from my perception, was political. Actually, I felt that it tended to put us into a panic. The next thing that occurred was that George McDonald announced that he was going to resign too. And I went to George and I told him, I said, George, I said, it looks to me as though you're trying to panic us. Well, he said, I didn't really intend to do that. He said, I just am not interested in a 12 grade system. But we had some real rough times back then. As I say, Dwight Stocker was for it. And he took one of his people and assigned them permanently to pushing for annexation. And the Kalamazoo Gazette had a reporter out here who definitely was pro-annexation. It appeared that he, whether he, as a matter of policy, as an employee of the Gazette or what, definitely, everything we said he tended to discount. We had a bad time there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So what finally turned the tide?
Well, I really don't know, except that there were those of us who felt that we did have that opportunity, and then there were a great number who felt that it would be less costly if we were to annex to the city of Kalamazoo than to go it alone. And taking the groups together, it was enough so that at the time of the final election, we decided to become a K-12 district. Several elections had to take place. First off, we had to elect to vote to become a K-12 district, which that was easy because not only was it Parchment, but remember, part of the Parchment School District extended into Cooper Township, too, and a bit into Kalamazoo Township. Then we had to decide, once we became a K-12 district, then the city of Parchment had to decide whether or not to annex to the city of Kalamazoo, and that was voted down.
It was voted that they should not annex.
That we should not annex to the city of Kalamazoo.
Sure.
See, that was a political rather than educational.
Sure, but they were probably, were they interrelated? In other words, so first the district decided to remain K-12 on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And then the commission had to look at.
But you see, the district was larger than the city. The district, the school district, encompassed the whole city of Parchment, as well as part of Cooper Township, as far north as the CKNS Railroad. And we went down for as far south as Mount Olivet Drive. And so we had two separate elections. One was a school district election, and the other was a city election.
So at the time your superintendent resigned, you had new board members.
That's right.
And that's a challenge.
That's right. See, we had just Vic Smith and I were the only holdovers because not only were we without a board of education any longer, we had to get three new board members, and we had to look for a new superintendent. And so really, really, we were in a panic for a while, believe me, but we survived.
And how long did that process take? Do you remember roughly when your superintendent resigned, what year that might have been?
Well, I was elected to the board in 1956, and so it would have been that spring of 1957 that these three board members, one of them said that he wasn't going to seek re-election, and the other two resigned. And, of course, the publicity was they had all resigned, followed by George's resignation. And that occurred all in the spring of 1957.
Wow. And then you must have done some pretty quick work because we had a new high school built fairly shortly there.
Well, we put in several hours, believe me. See, we had a unique opportunity here. As long as we had decided to do it ourselves, we had a unique opportunity. One was to design a curriculum and then design a building to fit the curriculum. More often than not, we have a building to which we have to adapt the curriculum. But we did. We put in a lot of hours at that time, and we finally had the election. Of course, our first election was for $1,595,000, and there were two things that I think probably served to defeat our first millage. The Reader's Digest had had an article entitled, "Need Schools Be Costly Palaces?" Which, of course, put schools that were current at that time, kind of on the defensive. And at the same time, just about the time of the election, our election was to have been the 1st of December. Again, this is my perception, Steve. But since Les Hubbard worked for the mill and we normally got our tax notices around the 1st of December, that particular year, we all got our tax notices out before the 1st of December. I don't think that helped any. And on top of that, also, the Gazette quoted Dwight Stocker as accusing the Board of Education of being extravagant and impractical. And I think those, plus the circulation of this Reader's Digest article by one of our leading members in the community, I think served to defeat that first bond issue.
That your bond request had been extravagant and impractical.
That's right. And we didn't really see, again, we didn't have the ear of the Gazette. That was part of our problem. We didn't have the ear of the Gazette. They didn't listen to us.
Yeah, you were the rebels to begin with.
Oh, indeed we were. Indeed we were. Indeed we were.
And then you must have gone back for another bond issue.
Yes, we surely did. Yeah, we went back and we did some modifying. One of the things that probably didn't help the first issue was the fact that we had an Olympic-sized gym in the original plans. As far as I'm concerned, I'm unhappy over that and have been for the last 50 years to think that all of the generations of young people have not had the advantage of swimming.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got that. You must have gotten that bond issue passed.
We also had a courtyard, and we removed the courtyard. People thought that a courtyard was expensive, and yet it doesn't make that much difference because you've still got to have wall for the classrooms anyway. But that was another sore point with the community, and I think the courtyard helped to defeat it.
So now we
removed the courtyard, but somehow or other, during the final analysis of the thing, we did end up with the courtyard.
That was going to be my question. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Which here in 2009. Just finally went away through the renovations. Very interesting. So then you served on the Board of Education after that for many more years.
Well, I served from then until 1965. At that time, I had been working for Ingersoll Kalamazoo Division. They had closed in 1964. And I had gone to work for Clark Equipment Company in Cassopolis. It was commuting, which didn't suit me too much. And so the Kalamazoo Valley Intermediate School District Board of Education offered me a job as services consultant. And the implication was that in order to take that job, I would have to resign my position on the Parchment Board of Education. I don't think that was correct, but at least that was implied. And so at that time I resigned.
And your son was involved in the Board of Education?
Not at that time yet.
Not yet.
He wasn't involved until after I was elected the second time.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us about that. How much later was that?
Well, 1975. And what had happened there, we'd had a big upheaval again. There had been a lot of trouble here with Fred Hall. In fact, he had been relieved pretty much of his responsibilities. And the existing board had hired a new superintendent whom they found bought his diploma. So they didn't hire him, but also they took some action to... They took some action that was action that the majority of the board didn't take. They took, and one member was in the hospital and came out to vote, and then another member changed his vote. And the result was there was a recall. And several members were recalled, and at the time they hired a new superintendent from down in Ohio, George
Kingsmore.
Kingsmore. And also, they had a rather inexperienced board. Your dad was on the board at the time. Ann Cooper was on the board, Brian Leonardson, Bill Birch, John McCarty. John was president. And I thought, well, here's a superintendent that really doesn't know Michigan school law too well, and you've got a board that hasn't had too much experience. Perhaps I could help. So I sought a seat on the board and was elected again in 1975.
Very good. And I should just clarify, I'm Stephen Gibson. That was Chandler Gibson was my father. And so he was on the board slightly before, one of the new people.
That's right. He was on the board at the time I was elected.
After that recall, and it's funny, I was a child. I don't remember much about what the issues were. I do remember
Chan was not one of the recalled members.
Right. He became involved with Jack Kaiser, I thought.
Kaiser was on the board, too. That's okay. Right. Yeah.
After the recall controversy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you joined in 75? No.
1975.
Okay. 1975. And
of course, I thought I could be some help, and then promptly I ended up with heart surgery, so I was out of circulation for 3 months.
So I always find this, obviously have no dog in the hunt, so to speak, but I always find the history of these kind of things interesting. So the main controversy that prompted the recall was what?
Well, the fact that this group had done something that was illegal. They had taken action as a board when they didn't have a majority of the board with them.
Gotcha. See? Were there other issues involved in terms of different
philosophy? Well, actually, see, I had been working. I was on the staff of the Kennedy Media School District at the time, so I had been commuting between here and Kalamazoo, or here in Grand Rapids, and so I was out of town so much of the time that I was really not up with it.
Yeah, interesting. So then you got through your heart surgery and kind of got back into things, and obviously those wounds were healed over time. And
oh yes, indeed they were. I thought it was that's something that as I stood there the other day, waiting to cut the ribbon, I couldn't help thinking what great dividends my efforts way back in the early days of the history of the Parchment School District. As a K-12 district, where I think that my efforts were definitely amply repaid.
Oh, well, we certainly were so thrilled that you could be there, and we should clarify for the record that we just cut the ribbon on the massive $18 million renovation to the high school. That was September 1st, I believe, of 2009.
September 1st, that's correct, yeah.
And Mr. Patterson, who, of course, had cut the ribbon at the original building,
that's right.
Was with us, and I'm now Board of Education President.
Yeah.
It was an honor to, and I made some comments then about, indeed, it must be a little surreal to look at that milestone, and as I commented about all of the people educated out of that building that have gone on to do amazing things.
Oh, yes, indeed.
It must be a sense of satisfaction.
It certainly is. When I think what we have here and how hard we worked to get it, as I say, our efforts paid well.
Indeed.
And I don't, at least if there is any kind of dissension in the community, I don't feel it these days.
No, and not to digress too far here, but when we've had to look for superintendents, and we've gotten some real stars in the last several years who have been around and stayed around, and we joke that we're the training ground for the recess superintendency.
That's right. Yep.
But I think we are able to attract good candidates because we have the type of cooperative environment that we do here.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the outstanding accomplishments in the Parchment School District during the early days of the district was the fact that there were people in the community who were concerned whether or not we could get North Central accreditation for our graduating classes. And we were told that, yes, it's possible to have North Central accreditation the first year you have a graduating class, but it's not easy. And that was one of the things to which Fred Hall was dedicated. And he, Joe Solomon, who had been a Latin teacher and also a librarian at one time, devoted most of his time to seeing that we went in that direction.
Interesting.
And we had our building up. The North Central Association people came to visit us. And they didn't right offhand say, yes, we'll approve you. But there were certain suggestions that they made, among which was that they didn't feel our what we had for band facilities were quite adequate. And also, again, this goes back into history. There was a gentleman who at one time was an editor for the Kalamazoo Gazette. His name was Lowell Plasterer. And Lowell was a correspondent for Time. And Lowell, I was president of the board, and Lowell came to me and he said, well, what are you going to do about it? And I said, well, what do you mean we're going to do about it? He said, well, you got to do something. I said, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think we have to. I wasn't about to put money into brick and concrete and then find out that we fell short on staff. But anyway, that broke into Time magazine about this being a poor community of 2,000 people and the great big juggernaut of the North Central Association was leaning on us.
Oh, interesting.
That's how come I whispered to Mr. Miller the other night. I said, we got into Time magazine, and that's how come we got into Time magazine. And one of our consultants was from the University of Michigan. His name was Kehoe, Dr. Kehoe. And Dr. Kehoe said, the last time I talked to him, he said, well, I no longer read Time magazine.
Wow. So how was that resolved? Were the band facilities left alone, obviously?
That's right. We went on, and we had North Central accreditation. The first year we had a graduating class.
Wonderful.
And one of the comments prior to all of this was, well, it took Portage 9 years to get accreditation. How are you going to do it in 1 year? Well, we didn't know how we were going to, but we knew it was possible to be done. So Fred and the staff set out to do it and were successful.
That is impressive indeed. And we should call Time magazine and tell them we finally just fixed the band room.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And had North Central accreditation all along. That's an impressive story. And I didn't realize Joe Solomon was involved.
Oh, yes, very much so.
So intimately in that process. His daughter remains a teacher of ours today.
Was that right?
And my understanding is he wrote the lyrics to the Parchment Fight song, same gentleman.
Well, he might have.
I will verify that, but I think so. Interesting. Educationally, obviously, a tremendous amount of history there. And then what year did you finally retire from the Board of Education?
1987.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how many years?
Well, that was
altogether?
A little over 21 years altogether.
Impressive. And your son was on the board with you for some of that.
Part of that time, too. That's right.
Many years of service there. Talk to me about the community itself of Parchment, the city, if you will. Went through an awful lot of changes. You were involved in what John Abramson, who was also a board member.
Yes, that's right.
Doc Abramson, as he was known mm-hmm. affectionately, and his wife Viva, and mm-hmm. you were involved in the library.
I was into library.
Tell mm-hmm. me how that evolved, because that was a school library.
It became a school library originally, and somehow around here somewhere, I probably have a letter that I wrote to the community about, because the library needed some kind of community sponsorship in order to get penal fines. And the city of Parchment didn't want to, and they were rebuffed a number of places. And we had, as a school district, we had to vote to adopt them. And so I sent a letter out pointing out what the reason for it, and also that the impact on the community as far as the school district as far as funds are concerned. And we finally opted to sponsor the Parchment Library. And they were under our aegis up until, well, until we ran into bad times here, bad financial times for a while there. And they wanted out then. See, when we had our first proposal for the modification of the middle school, we included the library down kind of on the north side of the building. And anyway, they wanted out. And one of the things that I was very much concerned was that if they were to become an entity of their own, that it not be limited just to the city of Parchment, that it be, it include the entire school district, because over the years, taxpayers in the entire school district had actually contributed to the library through their taxes to the school district.
Sure.
And I couldn't see the rest of the school district being shut out. And I guess there were enough. I mean, it wasn't that I was that strong enough, but there were enough who agreed with me that it became a community library. And there, it was interesting. The library board apparently couldn't at the time. They couldn't levy taxes. So we had to have this joint building authority impaneled. And that joint building authority consisted of five people, three from the school district and two from the city. And I was one. Tim Jenny, who was superintendent at the time, asked me if I would serve. And so then I served until the bonds were paid off.
Yes, that was for the construction of the existing library mm-hmm. facility, mm-hmm. and I should know what year that was. But off the top of my head, I don't. Do you?
Well, I can probably tell you when the bonds were paid off. About 1988.
So you served on that committee. And then at some point, it was, the law was changed so that...
Well, that's true. The law was changed. We were the last that did that. The law was changed so that the library board would be able to levy its own monies.
Yeah, very good. Talk to me a little about the culture of Parchment over the years. What, whether it's Bob Belisle or... certainly the library and the mill culture, but what memories do you have of life in the average day of Parchment?
Well, I remember nothing bad about it. It was all good, every bit of it. It was a wonderful place to which to move, and certainly I have never regretted having done so. It's been a very, very fine place, as far as I'm concerned, in which to bring up young people, children. And I thought that was the case, and I certainly feel that I was right.
What are your recollections of Bob Belisle?
Well, my recollections of Bob, of course, when we moved to Parchment, Harding's Grocery was in there where Bob finally vacated. Bob had a little store just to the south of Harding's Grocery. When Harding's moved out, Bob moved in. And he had his soda fountain and was really quite public-spirited. Well, Bob was a real good man. Right there where the memorial clock is, Emil Foster had a standard service station when we moved to Parchment. And right behind that, Neil Klosterman had the Ford agency in a garage. Of course, when Emil got out of it, Joe Gatwood took over, and then they built the station across the corner, and Joe didn't want to take it, so he lost out on it altogether.
And I'm sorry, let's go back to where Bob's store was. There's the corner store, which is the drugstore.
Well, that was a drugstore, and back in the 30s, that was Shriner's Drugstore. And by the time we moved to Parchment in 1945, it was Frank Clark.
Okay. Now, ironically, the leased space that we occupy that Ron Sexton owns today in 2009 is a little building immediately behind that.
Yeah, Frank built that kind of for a card shop.
Okay. For a card shop.
Mm-hmm.
And was there a soda fountain in either of those buildings?
Well, Bob had a soda fountain.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. He had one of the regular old-fashioned soda fountains in his building.
In his building he did on...
In the building where the aquarium is now.
Yes, yes. In his building from which he retired.
Yeah.
Yes. I certainly... That was a landmark. That one we all remember well.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was, yeah.
Plenty of... Of gum underneath the counter.
That's
the thing I remember.
That's right. Yeah.
Bob playing the spoons on or playing the sinks.
I didn't spend much time in Bob's store there.
Yeah.
Not as much time as you kids did.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed, it was a convenient location coming out of school or whatnot.
Yeah.
Get a candy or something. Now. The City Hall eventually took shape.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recollection of that process? You said when you came here, there was not a City Hall.
No, there was no City Hall. Well, I remember when it was built, and I thought, gee, that's a dinky little building, and very, very, very unimpressive. But it has served us well, and it has been enlarged in the interim.
Interesting.
But when we moved out here, of course, the city of Parchment, city limits came up the middle of Thomas Street here. North of Thomas Street was in the Kalamazoo Township. And the city limits went right down through Orient, the middle of Orient here. And incidentally, at the time we moved up here, Orient didn't even go through to Parchment.
Oh.
It went south, and actually from about Thomas Street south was pretty much a cow path. And in fact, the Zernekes raised feeder cattle in the area on immediately east of Orient Street.
And I believe there are still some drainage issues going on.
Oh, yeah. And of course... I was gardening on the vacant lot back here, and there were... Boku stones. Now, I had so many stones, I finally went to the city hall and asked them if it would be all right if I dumped my stones in the valley there. So I used to take my stones down there in the wheelbarrow and dump them in the valley.
And at some point, those boundaries, there was annexation of this township land.
That's right, yeah. See, we squared it up to G Avenue, and then we squared it out to Clarendon.
Yes.
I don't think it didn't affect the south city limits. The south city limits went along the south lot, the backs of the properties on the south side of Espanola.
And there's still a little strange sliver of township right by City Hall there, too, I believe.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of a mixed-up mess right there. yeah, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, perhaps I think maybe the house right next to City Hall is in the township rather than the city of Parchment. Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other Parchment? What have I missed? What have we missed? Are there other key events or memories when you think of life in Parchment that we've not covered?
Well, of course, I think of the ball games they used to have in Kindleberger Park.
Oh, tell me about that. I'm
oh,
much too
yeah,
young.
Oh, yeah, that actually, the Parchment Field had a real baseball team, not softball, baseball. And they had a big ball diamond there. And on the 4th of July, we always had fireworks. My girlfriend and other friends and I used to come up off of Mossel Avenue and go down through what is Park of Barkley Hills now, and watch the fireworks from the top of the hill. And of course, the park There was a very, very beautiful rose garden up in the southeast corner of Kindleberger Park, too. And the superintendent, the park superintendent, had been a former neighbor of ours living down in the Vine Street district in Kalamazoo. He came out here and he lived on the corner of Maple and Park, Hugh Hagedone. And for a long time, the mill financed all of that. But then as they began to back out, of course, it was an expense that the city had to take over, and they were not able to maintain it to the same extent that the mill did.
Interesting. And that's gone now. That's the southeast corner, you said?
The southeast corner. Up there,
By the Little League Diamond area.
Yeah.
Never knew that. Interesting.
Oh, a very beautiful rose garden there.
Interesting. And when the mill supported, was it a mill baseball team that played in the park?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And probably then fireworks were a mill?
On the 4th of July, would be a big firework demonstration. They set them off in Kindleberger Park.
Yeah. And did the mill pay for those things?
That I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like they were certainly very involved.
Oh, yes, they were. Indeed, they were. Yep, they were. But gradually, as time wore on, they backed out little by little, and we taxpayers moved in little by little too.
Yeah, yeah, and have preserved well those institutions and interesting. Well, this has been a lot of fun. We've looked back a fair amount. How about if I challenge you to look forward? What do you think the future holds for Little Parchment?
I think it's good. I think the future looks good for us, particularly this new development down there that's going to take the place of the mill. And I was very much concerned when I saw a for sale sign down there. I thought, oh, my golly, I wonder if that deal has fallen through. Well, I checked, and no, that wasn't true. The new developers were advertising for tenants in what they're developing. So really, I think it's going to become a very fine community. Is yet.
Sure.
And I thought that when Crown Vantage went to the wall, that we took quite a blow. But I do think we have survived quite well.
Indeed.
And I think that we're going to not only survive, but prosper from now on.
Yes, and we will have these treasures of which you are a part, the school system, the high school, the library. We certainly have the treasure of the park. It's a unique little geography and a unique little community, certainly.
Yeah.
So I share your optimism.
Oh, I feel very hopeful for Parchment.
Well, this has been a pleasure. Thank you for talking with us.
Well, you're more than welcome. I'm very happy to be able to do it. I might also point out that geographically speaking now, topographically, that Groveland extended from Thomas north to G Avenue, but there was a gravel pit on the west side of Groveland, and it was so close to the street that had you not watched what you were doing, you could have driven off into the gravel pit where all of these houses are out there now. You wouldn't believe that.
Really?
But, yeah.
And this is right behind what is now the Hardings. No kidding.
Yeah.
How long was that pit operated in?
The pit was not in operation after we moved to Parchment.
Okay.
They took a little bit of gravel out, but there was not any great activity.
I do have. It just occurred to me. I see all the trains of the old interurban, the picture of the old trains of the interurban rail system. Was that before your time?
Yes, the interurbans went out in about 1929. See, there was a line from Kalamazoo to Grand Rapids. It was a real fast line. They really thought it was something to get from Kalamazoo to Grand Rapids in an hour. And they came out through Parchment here. And a long time when Riverview Drive went under the Mossel Avenue Bridge there. If you looked overhead, you could see a line of smoke, which had been part of the CKNS Railroad, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where Riverview was?
Yeah. Where, yeah, mm-hmm, right. Yeah.
Okay, so where Riverview used to go under Mossel Avenue.
Mm-hmm. That was part of the old CKNS.
Part of the rail system.
CKNS Railroad at one time.
Oh, okay. And that's right, because the original road was closer to the river, wasn't it? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, it was narrower. In fact, actually, it was farther away from
the river, really.
It was farther away from it. See, it was up on the top of the hill. Riverview Drive was up on the top of the hill there, see? And the CKNS Railroad was down below there.
Right, and that road is still there. The old Riverview is still there.
Yeah, parts of it.
I'll have to look into that. It seems I remember in some of Jake Kindleberger's notes about the road being impassable, being wet down by the... But that might have been even an earlier... I don't know.
But the interurban right-of-way was different from the CKNS right-of-way, however. As you go out north of town, of course, the CKNS went east over toward Richland Junction and Dalton, and the interurban went north and west toward Plainwell and on into Grand Rapids.
Yes. Yes, along the river, across D Avenue, and straight north.
Yeah.
In late 30s, you think that...
No, it was gone.
I'm sorry, late 20s.
The interurbans went out. They left Kalamazoo about 1929, and the streetcars left Kalamazoo in 1933. We had a strike there, and they stopped operation. The automobile became so popular that the electric traction lines were no longer profitable.
Yeah. Boy, it's almost too bad to this day that we don't have that
rail line. You know, in 1940, let me see, it would have been 1942. That particular summer, I went to Georgia to work, and I drove at 35 miles an hour all the way from Kalamazoo to Savannah, Georgia, going south out of Louisville on US 31. Here was the old abandoned interurban right-of-way, and I couldn't help thinking at the time how badly we needed it then, because transportation was at a real premium during World War II. US 131 has existed per se as a roadway, not where it is right now, but as a roadway ever since I can remember.
Yeah, that makes sense, sure. Anything else that you had written down that I failed to ask you about?
Well, there's one that would be of some interest to you, I think, possibly, and that is that prior to our remodeling of the school district, there was a group of small houses projected south on Keys Drive down in behind the school, too. One of those houses has been moved down on Glengyle down here, the first house down from the apartments. And there was a whole group of those houses, and they were moved around various places.
Interesting. So they kind of went through what is now the playground behind the middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is interesting.
Yeah. At one time, of course, I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, but the school had bought 10 lots on the east side of Orient from Thomas Street North to the lot on the very corner of G and Orient. And I know that at the time, the reason they bought those lots, they figured it might be an access for a high school. And then, of course, St. Ambrose Church came in. And this is another thing that occurred during our condemnation hearing. See, we had to condemn to get the property for the high school.
Okay.
And Julius Zernacki, we wanted 20 acres from Julius Zernacki, and we wanted 20 acres from Elwin Friedenberg. And it seems that Julius sold property to St. Ambrose Church for $1,000 an acre. Now, we had offered both the Friedenbergs and the Zernackis, we had offered them $2,500 an acre for the property. And something was said in one of the meetings Julius was there, and somebody said, well, you sold the property to St. Ambrose Church for $1,000 an acre. He says, that was give away.
So, and something I should have asked. So it was through a condemnation.
Oh, yes, we had to go through condemnation. Of course, here it again was a situation which I consider to have been a lose-lose situation, really, because we ended up paying $2,500 an acre, which is what we offered. We had our legal fees. The Friedenbergs and the Jerneckis had their legal fees. So it was a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
Central Elementary was here when we came back from Grand Rapids. See, we moved to Grand Rapids in 1967 and came back in 1970. And in the interim, Central Elementary had been built.
And that was part of all that high school land that mm-hmm. you had been involved in. Mm-hmm. And we just used some of it for an additional elementary school.
Yeah.
Of course, I went to East Cooper School.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah.
It was closed at the end of my second grade year.
I remember when we closed East Cooper, because that was after I got on the Board of Education a second time. We had studied birth records in Kalamazoo County, and then our share of the young children coming in kindergarten over the years, and we kept losing all the time. We were going down. We could see that we were going to go down to the point where we didn't need the East Cooper Elementary any longer. So we sold it, and that, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if that's ever been used for anything over the years.
It has pretty much fallen in on itself.
Yeah.
It has pretty much imploded. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, within the last decade, a superintendent or two will still get a phone call angry that we closed that school.
Oh, is that right? Oh.
Or say, well, we could have used it. You know, people have long memories, but...
Well, at the time we closed East Cooper, there was discussion about closing Barclay Hills, and here again, I was kind of vocal about that. I said we really ought to hang on to it. I said, I don't want to close it. And then has to go back to the people in 5 years and ask for money for more buildings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we did keep it, and it has been used ever since.
It sure has. And it seems that the closing of East Cooper, history has proven, was a pretty wise move, I think.
Yeah.
But I do recall, about the time East Cooper was closed, some very difficult financial times for the district.
Oh, yes.
That required us to close for 2 weeks in the middle of one winter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this occurred after 1975, so it would have occurred after the early 70s.
Okay.
Because it occurred after I got back on the board again.
What was the cause of that financial hardship, do you remember?
Yeah, we'd had a couple of millage defeats.
Mm. That's right.
That was the cause.
Okay. The funding mechanism back then was...
Yeah. That was the cause.
Yeah.
See, at the time I came to teach in Parchment, the Parchment School District, the State Aid Act was such, the Parchment School District was in very, very excellent financial condition. And in fact, such good financial condition that if they carried over too great what's called an uncommitted balance, they would lose some of their state aid. I know the second year that I turned in my requisition for equipment to George for the shop, I went to him after I turned in and said, oh, George, I don't have to have it, but I said, I sure would like another South Bend metal lathe. He kind of blew it off. So I dropped it too. I don't have to have it. About a week later, he came back and he says, if you can get that lathe and get it built by the 1st of July, you can have it. So you know what that meant.
Yeah. Certainly different times in terms
of
how that worked.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I sure appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure.
It's been fun.
I want to say also that I really feel honored to have been asked to participate in the cutting of that ribbon.
Well, the honor was truly ours.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Well, we're indebted and grateful for so much that you've done. It was truly our pleasure. What a neat thing to have 50 years celebrated and have the original ribbon cutter there with us.
Well, I looked to see if I could find the picture of that original ribbon cutting, but I have not been able to come across it yet. I've got it here somewhere, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah. That's neat that you've got it. Someday it'll turn up. Maybe we can get a copy of it when you find it.
Yeah.
But I sure appreciate it.
My pleasure.